We're quite scared of having our stuff judged. And the best way to not have it judged is to never launch it.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders, and welcome to episode 15. Today, I had the privilege of interviewing our first primarily web developer, Rachel Andrew. Rachel is an esteemed web pioneer who generously shares her vast knowledge and experience through articles and the many books she's authored, including her new great one we talked about today, CSS Grid Layout. So much good stuff in this interview with the experienced Rachel Andrew. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Rachel Andrew is a web pioneer and the managing director and founder of UK-based web development company edgeofmyseat.com. She's a prolific author of a number of web development books, including her most recent, a book apart published, CSS Grid Layout. She's also an active speaker who has spoken at a number of notable web conferences. When she's not writing code or writing about writing code, she's a taxi to teenagers and quite the fitness buff. Welcome, Rachel. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
I'm really glad to be here.
Awesome. So as you know, we take kind of a fun superhero theme to the show. It's sort of a nice differentiator, and I'm a big superhero nerd, so it all worked out. So with that, I have three segments here for this show, and the first one is secret identity and origin story. Now, every superhero has one, and I'd like to talk about yours. So I'd love to take a minute to start the show by you giving us a look into your personal life.
Okay. Origin story for me is quite unusual.
Great.
Because I've been doing this for such a long time, it's less unusual. There's lots of people sort of my age have got funny backstories, but I'm actually a trained dancer.
Oh, wow.
I always intended to dance and or be in the theatre somehow. I trained as a dancer. I worked for a while as a dancer and choreographer, and then I went backstage. So I worked in the West End of London on a couple of different shows there as basically a theatre carpenter and stage crew.
Wow.
So very unusual route into this industry, which came via, via professional theatre and dance and backstage work and things. The reason I ended up actually even owning a computer was I got pregnant with my daughter in 96.
Uh-huh.
And I then realized that I had absolutely no skills that could earn me any money other than dance and throwing scenery around. And I'd learned to type on typewriters at school because I'm that old.
And so, oh, please.
So I thought, well, I'll get a word processor because word processors were a thing. And I'll get a word processor. I'll take in typing. That's the thing I can do. And the salesman at PC World sold me a computer instead of a word processor. And that is how I ended up with a computer on my desk and doing this stuff at all. I've got a very strange sort of history into the industry, really.
What a great backstory. And computers were so slow back then, right?
Yeah.
Compared to now, but that's all we had at the time.
Yeah, and difficult to use. And I think really that's why I kind of got into just being interested in this stuff, is that I had this computer that was appalling. And I could either have the modem working or I could have the sound card working, not both at the same time because of some conflict. And so trying to just work that out, and I'm the sort of person, my dad's a programmer. So I'd always been brought up to sort of try and figure things out for myself. So when this wasn't working, I'm like, well, why isn't this working? And so I started fiddling around with it and learning how a computer worked at all, because I didn't really know. And so really learning how to build websites and then really to program, because that's sort of the route I started to learn Perl and actually do a lot more programming, was just because I wanted to know how to do stuff. I was just trying to work it out, you know, how do I do this? How do I have a guest book on my website, you know, or whatever it was I was interested in. And it's that sort of interest in stuff. And I'm still like that. I still want to know how things work.
Very nice. Yeah, guest books, that was the comments of the early web, the comment system of the early web. I remember. I started in 96 myself, so I definitely I have a lot of fond memories of that time. And my next question, you sort of started diving into it, but if there's anything you want to add, my next question would be a nice segue from that is, what inspired you to pursue a career in this exciting, challenging, and ever-evolving field?
Well, it really sort of, it was kind of a mistake. I started building websites. I built my own website. I mean, I really was just doing it because I wanted to put pictures of my baby daughter, you know, on the web.
Oh, yes.
There was no Facebook or anything like that. If you wanted to do this stuff, you had to build a website.
So exactly.
That was really, and then, of course, I was the person that people I knew, you know, I knew how to build websites. And that was a skill that was really useful. So any sort of organization I was involved with, and I've always done a lot of volunteer work and things. My mum's a preacher, so I was brought up in the church. Yeah, so I'm kind of... There were people I knew who then said, oh, well, could you build us a website too? And so I started building these things. And so it was because of that that then someone said, you know, with a business said, well, could you build us a website? And how much would you charge for it? And then I had to figure that out.
Interesting.
So it really was just that it was so early on that I was just someone who knew how to do this stuff. And I kind of, having taught myself, I wasn't scared of any of it. You know, the next thing I had to learn, I would be like, oh, well, you know, I'll be able to learn that. I can figure that out. So I wasn't sort of really frightened to tell people that, yes, I'd be able to help them and I'd be able to work it out. And so that's kind of just what I did, you know.
Yeah, I sense like a really interesting sort of parallel here. And I know you're really into philosophy and religious beliefs and studying those things. So really interesting parallel here. Indulge me, if you will. You know, like early on in the Catholic Church, you remember there was Martin Luther who sort of disrupted some things by posting a note on the door, and then the Protestant movement sort of happened. So in a way, I see like an interesting segue with your journey of you being kind of that person and early on where everybody's like, hey, you're the one that knows how to do this stuff. Can you do this for me? And now the web is so democratized. Information is so democratized. So it's like everybody has access to the same great information out there. So it's just an interesting kind of thing.
Yeah, and you know, the thing was, I was 22 when my daughter was born. I'd left school at 16 to dance. I had no real skills. I had this weird sort of backstory of having done dance and technical theatre. You know, what on earth would I have done had it not been for the internet? You know, because I really had no qualifications. I mean, I've sort of gone on to, I did a degree in religious studies for sort of my own entertainment, but you know, I've still got no actual qualifications in the thing that I do. And you know, I mean, all the writing I've done and things, you know, I've got, like you say, I left school at 16. I've got the very basic of qualifications that you can have in the UK, and yet I write books. And you know, it's the web has really enabled me through its sort of accessibility to someone who just had a terrible computer that had been foisted on her by a salesperson who was trying to make their target. I've managed to turn that into a career that's supported me and my daughter and you know, my husband now, he also works with me. So that sort of chain of events, and I think it's what, you know, I'm so keen to get other people into the industry and to encourage new people and younger people, because it's been completely life-changing to me. I have no idea what I would have ended up doing had it not been for the internet. Really.
Absolutely. I love that you shared that. I love this work. I love this field. I'm with you. I don't know what I would be doing. Before I got a job on the internet, I was putting pager crystals into dope baggies. So it's definitely not a future. And I was getting married at the same time, and we now are having our seventh child, believe it or not, in February.
Wow.
So thank God for the interwebs.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah,
I
think I need another TV.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Anyway.
My daughter's just turned 18, so I'm in this sort of phase of my life where I've got this adult, really, you know. I mean, she's away at college now, so it's amazing. Oh,
that's awesome, and I have one that's 4 years away from that age, so it's crazy how fast time goes by.
Yeah.
Anyway, who has been the biggest inspiration in your work, and why, Rachel?
There's been so many people who I think have made a big difference. I mean, I was obviously very influenced by the work of the Web Standards Project, and I eventually became a member of the Web Standards Project. So I think all of those sort of early pioneers who cared about, you know, sort of the open web and the fact that, you know, this should be something that is for everybody and should be accessible to everybody. You know, I think all of that group, obviously, and Jeffrey Zeldman and Molly and people, you know, people really, really just believed that this was important and it was too important to sort of hand it over to companies to decide how the web should be. So I think really that's always been, as soon as I discovered sort of what was happening with the Web Standards Project and things, that was, you know, that was really quite early on. And I just thought, yeah, that's right. This is the right way to be thinking about this stuff. And I kind of just knew that, you know, not from any academic way, but just like, no, this should be open and it should be for everyone. And we should make sure it stays that way.
Absolutely. And I want to personally thank you for all of your work in the web standards to help get us where we are today. So I really want to thank you and Zeldman and all the other greats for helping.
It's interesting. So, yeah, I see people kind of complaining about the way things are now. And I'm just like, you know, there are things we have to keep an eye on that could go in very similar directions. But I think we're in a much better position because of the work of, you know, even people who before I started being involved with that, just actually taking this into the public view and saying this is something that's really important and we need to care about it. I'm very glad that happened. And I think, you know, it underpins a lot of what we do now.
Absolutely. Rachel, you kind of touched on this, and I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask anyway. If you weren't doing this for a living, what would be your second career choice and why?
actually, it would possibly be something around fitness, because that's
okay.
The other sort of big thing now. I mean, there's lots of stuff. There's a million things that I could be doing. It's impossible for me to sit and do nothing. I'm always doing too many things. And so I've sort of looked at all kinds of stuff that I would love to be involved in at some point.
Very nice.
At the moment, probably fitness, and probably I do all sorts of stuff. I'm always running or doing something silly.
Nice.
But 3 years ago, I shattered my arm. So I've got about 30% use of my right arm.
Oh, wow.
That was running. And so I've kind of got back to doing all the fitness stuff. And at the moment, I'm trying to figure out how on earth I can do cycling, even though I can't put much weight through that arm. And so I've sort of kind of got this idea in mind that I'd love to work with other people who've had that kind of life-changing injury, but wanting to get back into doing fitness. And maybe at some point I'll pursue sort of personal training qualifications to kind of do that as a bit of a sideline, perhaps.
That's awesome. I just, believe it or not, am realizing the value of fitness. Or maybe I knew about it, I just didn't care as much. I just turned 40 myself just that last year. And so I actually started a morning routine where I get on the treadmill every morning, and it has made such a difference. And I just want our defenders listening to just consider that. You know, I'm not preaching to you, but I just want you to know how beneficial it is to your life, to your well-being, and also to how you view others, your perception of others. I think it helps you care more about yourself, and therefore your care toward others really does increase. I've noticed it myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's where I do all my thinking. I mean, I do distance running. So, you know, I'll head off out. I often listen to podcasts and things while I'm running. But a lot of the time I'm just kind of thinking about stuff, you know, and just working through things.
Yeah.
And there's so many problems, you know, even just like sort of code problems, something I'm hitting up against and I can't figure out. And I'll go out for a run for an hour and come back, sit down, saw it, you know. It's just had that time to be away, and I travel a lot, I speak at conferences, and I run everywhere, you know. And it's how I explore cities that I'm only in for 3 days, you know. Because I can, you know, just get out onto the streets and have a look around.
That's so neat.
Yeah, so it's really important to me, and it's important to me that other people know how life-changing I think that, you know, been able to get fit and do things. And whatever level you are, you can always do something, even if it's just walking to start with or whatever, you know, you can do something.
Absolutely. And I some ideas that I've had just this past year as a result of exercise have been, I think, pretty good ideas. Like this podcast was one of them. And it actually exercising and taking care of myself really gave me the drive to actually do this, not just let it be an idea that dies in my head. So I appreciate you sharing that, Rachel.
Hi, it's Koivin from Subtraction.com and Adobe, and you're listening to User Defenders with Jason Ogle.
Let's talk about life-altering experiences and get into your transformation. Now, every superhero has some sort of life-altering experience that helps guide their purpose and leads them to a transformation where they realize the powers they have and harness them for the greater good. And certainly significant among those is failure. Now, failure is not something we like to talk about or put on our LinkedIn page, but it's unquestionably one of life's greatest teachers. Now, could you tell us a story about what's been the biggest one in your career?
Yeah, there's nothing massive. I mean, we now, I mean, basically my sort of day job, as it were, is I'm one half of Perch CMS, and that's our product. And we've been doing that now for nearly 7 years, believe it or not, which is quite a long time for a product.
But, congratulations.
But before that, I mean, essentially I started edgeofmyseat.com as really just a sort of consultancy doing freelance development work. And then when Drew was working, who's my husband, he was working for Yahoo and I needed more help. I was absolutely swamped. So we decided he'd come and work in the company as well. And then we just thought, let's try and do some sort of product. And the first product idea we had was essentially a bug tracker, and a bug tracker based around sort of getting things done type methodology. Because I am kind of into all of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, we spent a very, very long time trying to get this product. And basically what happened was the scope of this thing, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And we worked on it for, I don't know, it's probably about 2 years. We messed around with this and kept building it and kept it was just this ever expanding thing. And it never got launched because we could never get it to a point that we would cope with launching it. It was like, we need to add this one more thing. And eventually we just got fed up with it and never launched it. And so we did the exact opposite. I mean, we launched Perch after about 4 weekends of work. The very initial version was tiny. And that was absolutely because we'd learned from this experience of this ever-growing monster that we could never ship because it expanded in every direction. And it was mad because we knew, from working with clients, we knew that danger, and yet we did it to ourselves, you know.
Yeah. It's funny. I actually, just before our interview, I read your great article called Perfectionism or Procrastination. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that there was some inspiration taken from that story, but just a great read. I highly recommend it, Defenders. I'll put a link in the show notes. But it's really about all of this about minimum viable products and, do I wait? Do I launch it quick when it's not ready, or do I wait too long to where it becomes this Frankensite thing, right? So you touched on just the perfect solution. You want to speak to that real quick?
Yeah, well, I think, sometimes the procrastination is that thing where you sort of think, if I launch this now, people are going to say, it's going to be out in front of people and they're going to make comments or they're going to not like it and they're going to judge me for it. And I think a lot of the time we're as sort of creative people in whatever field we're working, we're quite scared of having our stuff judged. And the best way to not have it judged is to never launch it.
Exactly.
So we kind of procrastinate around, especially, that last sort of 10%, that last little bit that needs doing. And you think, I'll just hang on to it for a bit longer and make this perfect. And then there's another bit. And I think you do have to ship things and just be brave about it, really. I don't think it gets any easier, though.
Yeah, I love what Zeldman says. He says something like, good is the enemy of great and great is the enemy of shipping.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of truth to that. So I definitely recommend everyone reading that article. So I'd like to also now, I'd like to ask you, what do you want our listeners to take away from that story about the CMS and waiting too long?
I think it is that, firstly, if you're trying to build something, strip it down to the smallest thing you can do. The wonderful thing about the web and about digital things is that they can be works in progress, and you can launch something and you can improve on it.
Yes.
And you can get it into the hands of users and see what they will do with it. Because what we did with Perch was we launched something tiny, and then we waited to see what people wanted from it and what features people wanted to be added. And we still work like that. You know, we're still, the majority of the features that go into the product are completely based on user feedback and on what our customers say would be great and what they need for their projects. So, you know, once you get things into the hands of users, they'll tell you the missing bits. They'll tell you those very, very quickly. And so you can have them and you won't spend a lot of time adding things that actually no one's going to want, because you can easily do that.
Absolutely. And it is possible to have a maximum viable product. So beware, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
I totally get that. Do you have a story of something really crazy or super awkward that happened during user testing?
Not so much user testing. I mean, we've got all sorts of funny stories, you know, things that happen in technical support, mostly to do with the difficulties of the fact that our customers are all over the world and we sometimes just don't understand what each other are saying to each other. That's a lot of, I mean, we spend a lot of our time doing essentially tech support for our own product. So that's, I mean, that's really how Perch is tested. It's tested by being in front of customers and also their customers, because everyone in CMS is doing it, you know, not only because they're building a site, but they're doing it for their content editors and so on. So yeah, I mean, that's, Most of our problems are to do with language. Drew was having a conversation with someone, and he was trying to get her to explain what her mental model was of something, of, you know, what she was trying to explain. But she got very angry, and he couldn't understand why she was so angry. It turned out she'd thought that Drew had called her a mental model, some kind of weird insight himself. And it's like, you know, and it's like, oh.
That's great.
So, yeah, so it's kind of that sort of stuff we get. And then just, you know, I think the things you learn from talking to people from different cultures and how people expect to be approached and spoken to. I'm from the northeast of England, and we're well known for being incredibly blunt and short. And so when I think I'm just being quick and helpful, people think I'm being rude. And this happens to me all the time. You know, it happens in emails, it happens in tech support. And so I kind of have to keep reminding myself to be more flowery in my language.
Right. And not to mention your parents are from New York.
Yeah, well, no, my parents, like, they're Northerners as well. They moved up to...
Well, they live in New York.
Yeah, they do, yeah. So it's... So. It's kind of, yeah, I mean, and you don't, if you worked for a big company, they would have an entire department that would spend their time worrying about, you know, the sort of language to use if you're speaking to someone who, you know, is Chinese or is in Germany or wherever they are. And yet there's just two of us and we get it wrong sometimes. So that's, yeah. You know, that's for all of us working on the web, you know, you can be speaking to someone anywhere.
Absolutely. The language barrier, that's a really great one, because you got this whole business is about communication, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, I can see that being a big challenge, especially if your product is designed for an audience that crosses language barriers and cultural barriers and things.
Yeah, and we have people all over the world, because we wanted it to be, the admin all to be translatable from the start. So we very quickly had people sort of everywhere. And most people can speak pretty good English, because to actually be a developer, you kind of need to be able to speak English to
right.
all the resources and things. But being able to speak English, you don't necessarily have all the nuances and things that a native English speaker has. So, yeah, it can be interesting. But even, you know, British English people versus Americans can totally misunderstand each other, you know, the different way we speak.
Absolutely. So I know you're a web developer at heart, but I also know you do design for users. So I want to ask you, Rachel, what's your design superpower?
I think probably just the length of time that I have been doing this for now. There's so much instinct that goes into things, and just kind of knowing that things cause people problems. You know,
right.
There's just an instinct, you know, you just kind of, you've seen this before. And it's really, really hard to kind of even explain what all of those things are. It's just that sort of knowledge of, you know, things come into support and you can kind of sniff that there's just something odd going on there, you know?
Right.
A lot of that is down to just sheer experience of having done it. I think that really is a lot of what I fall back on day to day is just like, yeah, I think I've seen this before. I know what's going on here. And that really is something that, you know, you can't get from anywhere. It just is time, it's learning, it's being with people and seeing how people operate.
Absolutely. And I love that answer. Experience, there's no substitute for it. You could spend, and I'm not downplaying college or a degree. I think there's definitely importance to that, and it shows accomplishments. But I feel like the best teacher is actually getting in there, getting your hands dirty, and taking it on. That's why internships are really wonderful, too. For anybody listening, starting out, defenders trying to get in the field. And these are the people I really want to talk to, especially on this show, is people who are really wanting to dive into this exciting field but don't know where to start and are lost and all the everything that's changing. But get an internship, find a shop, a really great shop that's doing awesome work, and just get in there. Work for free if you can do it, you know, and you will learn so much. That education you'll get there doing hands-on work, you cannot substitute it.
Yeah, and I think it's working with, you know, different types of people and seeing how other people achieve things, and also just seeing the things that users run into problems with. You know, actually being able to witness that and being with people and learning from people who are different to how you are. That's, you know, that's just so important. And that knowledge just builds up and you can sort of fall back on it when you're in tricky situations.
Absolutely. Now, I'd like to ask you, Rachel, adversely, what's your design kryptonite?
My personal design kryptonite is anything that moves in my peripheral vision.
Guilty.
I get these focal migraines. You don't get a headache, you just get weird vision things. And if I'm looking at directly ahead of me at some text and there's anything moving in the side of my screens, it feels like that weird sort of visual thing that goes on when you get these focal migraines. And I can't read because I'm like, am I seeing that or is that really there?
Oh my goodness.
So I'm very aware of that sort of thing, you know, especially as people are adding more animation and things.
Yeah.
I'm very aware that is, and I certainly don't have the problems that some people have with things moving. But yeah, I'm sort of quite aware of that.
That is interesting. And you must have had a heck of a time during the Flash Revolution. Skip intro.
At least then our screens were tiny, so you didn't tend to have this issue with... Because now, you know, you sort of have a web page and you can read the content, but they've got some wretched ad or some background that's a video or...
Right. No, that's so true. And, you know, it's certainly animation is having a resurgent, but I think there's at least a lot more constraint now.
Yeah. It's a different sort of animation. And I think, you know, a lot of it can be incredibly useful.
Yeah.
Particularly, you know, within sort of user interfaces and sort of looking at how we can bring in some of that into the admin UI of Perch, because I think often it can make things seem a lot more sort of tactile and usable and give people prompts as to what to do next if used well. But I think we're just learning how to do that still. You know, and sometimes people get it right and it's brilliant when they do, but other times it can be just awful.
I fully agree. But it's been neat to see some of these experiences, just so much more thoughtfulness, it seems like, in the experiences that I'm seeing today, because design, there's finally this realization amongst the people that are paying for this work that design actually matters. You look at Instagram, it's an app that people will upload pictures to and share with others. It's that simple, but look at how much money those guys made by just selling that app to Facebook. So that's a neat thing.
This episode is brought to you by Universal Mind, a digital design and consulting company based in Denver, Colorado. Whether you started as a digital company or not, we're all digital now, and that's been a tough transition for many organizations. Universal Mind helps mid to enterprise-sized companies find and deliver something valuable through design thinking workshops, UX design and development consulting, and believes in supporting user defenders to help train and inspire the next generation of designers. Learn more at universalmind.com. This next question is a fun one, and I know that you didn't get here on your own. You know, you have great people around you, like your husband, Drew, and the teams that you've been able to work with. But I want to ask you, what would your design superhero name be?
I really do not know. I say, going back to feeling upward. In the UK, there used to be a program called Super Gran, which was about a grandmother with superpowers. And actually, generally, that's kind of how I feel these days. I go along to conferences, and I've just turned 40 as well. I was 40 last year, so I go along to conferences, and I was actually sat at a speaker dinner, and one of the other speakers was the same school year then as my daughter. And I'm just thinking, yeah, I'm really old now.
No, experienced. Experienced.
Yeah. But right? It's interesting. Because as I say, I don't in myself feel particularly old, but then every now and again, I'm sort of like, right. You.
Well,
you are the same age as my daughter. That's okay.
You know, Wolverine was what, 1,000 years old or something? So yeah. That's all right. Yeah. That's okay. Immortality.
For a while last year, I ended up, this probably doesn't mean too much to American listeners, but in Europe, we have this wretched VAT tax, which last year, the European Union caused utter chaos for small digital businesses by something that they did. And I did quite a lot of research into that, which caused a couple of people to start referring to me as VAT Girl, which is like the most rubbish superhero ever.
You know? Oh, no.
So, the person who knows about the most boring things and it to do with tax. You
know? Oh, man. My next question for you is, one of my favorite lines from Tron, and which inspired the show actually, was when he said, "I fight for the users." How do you fight for your users, Rachel?
Okay, well, I think, as I mentioned, we have a CMS, and I think that content editors are often the forgotten users because what we tend to see in our industry is that designers are selecting a content management system that they like working with, so they're choosing whichever, you know, whether they use Perch or whether they use WordPress or Drupal or whatever it is they're picking. They'll choose a CMS because it lets them build the sort of site they want to build. And so they think about the site they're building and the actual users who will come and use that site and kind of forget about this person who has to sit in the middle or team of people editing the content. And a lot of content management systems have appalling, you know, admin experiences.
Oh, yes.
You have to go through all sorts of weird steps to assemble the content of the website. So we've always cared quite a lot about trying to make that editing experience good for the person who has to sit in front of this thing. And because that helps the designer as well, because obviously if they're getting phone calls every day, how do I edit my site? That's not great. But
right.
So it's that group of users I'm particularly interested in. You know, the person who's left with the website after the web designer moves on. You know, a lot of the people who use Perch are sort of freelance or small agencies. They build something, they hand it over, and off they go. So I try and fight for those content editors, really, with the decisions we make, rather than just thinking about the designers and developers who buy the solution to put in front of their clients.
I love that answer, Rachel. The forgotten user, and that is so true. I mean, every enterprise level, even smaller businesses now, there's going to be some sort of system in place where the most important elements of the website or the digital experience is the content, and they're using tools that were designed when we started doing this, right? I mean, some of these tools looked like they were done in the late 90s or so.
Yeah, and these awful sort of WYSIWYG editors and just, you know, and expecting content editors to essentially make design decisions because the system's limited in you know, what it lets them do and how it guides them. And so, yeah, I kind of care about those users because I think they're, you know, they're the person who, you know, who sort of likes their CMS, you know, people are sort of like, oh, I have to go and do this. I have to go and add this content and it's miserable. And I want to try and find ways to make that more interesting or at least easy for people so that they can, you know, they can get their blog post published or update their news page or update their homepage and then get on with the rest of their business. Because usually for these people, updating the website is a tiny part of what they've got to do.
I love that. This is the last question of this segment, but it's a big one, and it's one of my favorites. It's what does the future of UX look like to you?
Yeah. Yeah, these sort of future questions. It's like, I think any prediction I make is likely to be wrong, but I think that I feel that we're kind of really just growing into an understanding of actually what the web is as its own thing. And we're sort of shedding the sort of shackles, really, of trying to essentially reproduce print design on the web. And I think we've been doing that for a very, very long time, and even till recently. And I think this comes down to things like the new CSS specs, things like Flexbox and Grid, which actually give us a layout system designed for the web, as opposed to, you know, the stuff we were using before, which was never really fit for doing web layout.
Right.
And stuff like the the rise of animation and things. We're actually starting to develop a language that is just of the web and of other sort of digital devices. And I think that's quite interesting, because we're having to learn how do we interact with these things, and touch is so important, you know, and mobile devices and the range of ways people are interacting with devices is growing all the time. We're going to have more interfaces that are operated, you know, by talking to them, you know, things like Siri. Mm-hmm. And how do we design? And that's design too. You know, how do people actually interact with those things? Usually very badly in my experience, because most of them just don't understand Northern British people. You know, I was terrible situation shouting at things. But yeah, I think, you know, I think it's kind of opening out into this whole range of ways that we're going to be sort of interacting with things. And that's very interesting. It's interesting to me from that kind of accessibility point of view, because at one point, it was only, say, someone who was visually impaired might use a screen reader and some sort of text-to-speech. And now it's like, well, anyone might be. You know, you could be using text-to-speech because you're in your car driving and you want to get some information. So I think that's quite interesting. And I think that's the future of this stuff, is this whole range of ways to interact with a single endpoint and how we do that.
Absolutely. And thinking about your wonderful book, which I know we're going to talk about a little bit more in a bit here, but I'm thinking about how when I started doing this, all I used CSS for was to make a hover state on my text links, right? Yeah. And just to see the evolution of where CSS has gone, and especially as it relates to your work and all those who worked on web standards and separating content from structure, and it's just so exciting to see where things are going. And your book is just amazing, and I'm going to highly recommend it, and I do highly recommend it to everybody. Get a hold of this book. This is the way of the future. It's so futuristic. You can't even really do it yet without turning your browser, turning a setting on your browser, which I just did recently when I started playing with this. Yeah. But it's just incredible what you can do, and no more floats, no more strange hacks. And like Eric Meyer said in your foreword, we've been doing this for over a decade. We've been hacking our layouts. So this is so welcomed and so embraced. And I'm so glad you wrote this book, Rachel.
Yeah, it's really good fun. And it's interesting to see, you know, as you sort of look at some of the CSS specs, some of the things that we've been trying to do or we've been doing with JavaScript, you know, are now getting into CSS. They're becoming sort of actual native solutions to do this. You know, and obviously if the browser's doing it, it's going to be a lot faster than if we write something to do it. So yeah, there's loads of cool stuff going on, and I really love CSS, and I it gets a really bad rap. You know, people are sort of right. Try and use something else to write our CSS. But there's some really, really cool stuff that you can do, and that increasingly we're able to do.
So true. And you are a great teacher. I just want you to know, I walk through these examples, and you start with really the most rudimentary way to use this, and then it just you just keep applying these layers of like, hey, you could start this way, but then you could do it even better this way, and then you can even throw the responsive stuff into it. It's just it's so neat how you show even the most fundamental areas of this and into the most advanced stuff. So I loved it. I'm learning a ton.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. So let's wrap up the show with the imparting of superpowers. What's one habit that you believe contributes to your success, Rachel?
I do a lot of sort of getting things done, essentially. That's my kind of productivity way of working is pretty much standard GTD. And it works very well for me. I think that it's kind of important to figure out the way that you work and create systems that support that and, you know, try out different productivity stuff. And there's people say, oh, how do you manage to get all this stuff done? How do you get organized? And it works. I've found the ways that work, that tick the boxes for me and it wouldn't work for everybody. And I think it's important to figure out what it is that drives you and makes you able to get through stuff and do the boring things as well as the fun things.
Right.
You know, for me, that's pretty much standard GTD. And I you know, I have lists of all sorts of stuff and I just work through things. You know, being able to work hard and keep myself organized and sort of motivated to do that is pretty much the main thing about me. I've never seen myself as the brightest person or, you know, I don't know everything about everything, but I just kind of get on with it. You know?
Nice. And defenders listening, I listen to Rachel. She's written a lot of books and it is not easy to write a book. I haven't written one myself, but I understand from everybody I've talked to, it's a lot of work. So you have to have systems in place that work for you and you have to, I love the GTD thing. I'm going to adopt that as well.
Yeah.
So definitely listen to those words there, defenders. Great input. What's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
At the moment, I've been learning quite a lot from the work of people like Brad Frost and Anna Debenham, who've been writing about style guides and pattern libraries. And Brad's working on a book about what he calls atomic design.
Oh, yes.
That has been really interesting to me. So, you know, we've got Perch, which is nearly 7 years old, and I'm sort of working on rebuilding the UI of Perch because it's, you know, it's actually a lot of it goes right back. So there's all sorts of bits and pieces that I thought I want to tidy up here. And that's quite overwhelming when you sort of start looking at it. You think, well, where on earth do I start?
Right.
And this idea of creating, you know, a style guide for an application, it's a really great way of just getting past that, sitting there, where on earth do I start? And like, okay, well, I'll start with buttons. I'll start with, you know, form fields. I'll start with just those little things and build it up from there. So, yeah, that sort of that work has been is really worth looking at. And I think Salesforce have published their style guide. That's a really great one. You can sort of see how they put together all their applications. So it's that sort of stuff is, at the moment, I think, quite important and a good way of dealing with how complex a lot of the stuff we're dealing with these days is.
Excellent. And I've looked into atomic design a little bit, but I need to look into it more because everybody's talking about it and how effective it's been for projects. So I appreciate that reference myself. So in addition to your amazing book, CSS Grid Layout, could you recommend one book to our listeners? What would you recommend to our listeners and why? What's one book?
Okay, this is it's not a design book. It's a book called The Checklist Manifesto, How to Get Things Right, by an author called Atul Gawande, I think is how you say that. But yeah, The Checklist Manifesto. It's basically about, it talks a lot about things like surgeons and airline pilots and people who have to go through very definite processes to make sure that they do all the things correct in actual life and death situations. But talking about how actually creating these checklists can free your mind up to do the more creative things because the things you know have to be done to make sure that, you know, whether it's a life and death situation or whether it's just, you know, getting your taxes sent in time.
Right.
you've got this kind of rote system, so you don't have to think about it. You don't have to expend any brain power, you know, thinking, oh, what's the next step that I have to do here? And I was kind of doing this anyway. There's lots of stuff. I do quite a lot of systems administration and things. So I have a lot of checklists, you know, have I checked all of these things to make sure that a server is set up properly or what have you. That's a really good book. And I think it's useful for creative people just to sort of get those tasks down and this is how these things operate. And then you can move on to something more interesting because, you know, you can get through those things.
That's awesome. And checklists are so important. Writing it down really helps you accomplish the task. I've noticed that in my own life and all the goals I've had and the things I've learned just having this show, all the things that go into doing this. And without a checklist, without actually saying, I'm going to get this done and even putting a date to it so you're committed, those are really critical things. And I appreciate you sharing that, Rachel.
Yeah, that's a neat book, though. So.
Awesome. I'm definitely going to put that in the show notes. So last question of this segment is, what's your best advice for aspiring design superheroes?
I think try to understand people who aren't like you. It's really easy to be, you know, in a bubble and think, oh, everyone's like me, you know, because we tend to surround ourselves with people who are a bit like us, you know. So if you really love design and if you're a bit of a geek, you know, you probably find that the people that you speak to most often are going to be a bit like you.
Yeah, true.
And it's when you sit down with someone who is not like you, when you sit down with someone who rarely uses a computer, who doesn't really even understand, you know, what the web browser is. You know, when you sit down with that person and actually try and help them or talk to them about their experience, you realize that it's a totally different world. You know, when you speak to someone who's got their first smartphone, you know, what their experience is. I think it's really important to try and spend some time with people who just aren't like you at all. Because that opens your eyes to the problems people have and the way they see the work that we do, you know, how they're interacting with it. I think it's very interesting.
I love that answer. And I feel like once we expose ourselves to different inputs, we're going to naturally have different outputs. And it's going to help us to grow more, not only in our work, but as people, in our character and in our perceptions. So I really appreciate that answer. This is actually a listener question I'd love to ask you. And this just came in today from Alex Maurer, and he's on Twitter. He's at Alex, M-O-U-R-E-R.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Rachel. My name is Alex Maurer, and I'm a front-end web developer. I'm always interested in hearing how other web developers work. So I was wondering what your process is for determining the best platform, framework, or just overall web development code to use for a project.
Yeah, frameworks, eh? It depends on a bunch of things. I mean, when we used to do sort of a lot of client work, so this is something that would come up quite a lot, and you can sort of think, well, yeah, you know, I could shortcut some time. I could maybe, you know, use this platform. I could use this off-the-shelf code or what have you. And one of the things that I would think a lot about is, well, what happens when I hand this over? You know, right. For instance, if I use an open source script for this, I could use WordPress, or maybe I could use, you know, an off-the-shelf e-commerce thing or whatever it is. Will that need updating? Who's going to update that? You know, how are they going to keep this secure? Who's going to manage this later? And I think it's a lot of the same with a lot of the frameworks. Using a CSS, a front-end framework, might be a good idea if that's going to help people to work with it later, because it's obviously got a lot of documentation around it. If you deploy something on Bootstrap, that's got a whole bunch of documentation around it. And if you're just handing it over, that might be a good thing to do. But equally, you might need to do something that's got to perform incredibly well, and you're gonna want to really tweak the performance of everything. Maybe it's better to start with your own thing, you know, to really start from the ground up. So it's very difficult to say, oh, there's one solution, because I don't believe there is. I think that the best thing anyone can do is get an understanding of what some of these different things out there are, so that when something comes along, you can quickly start to rule out the options that are definitely no good. You know, it's like, yeah, we've hardly got any time for this. We're going to have to start with something, you know, which is the best one to use. So I think it's having this kind of understanding of what's out there and sort of grouping those things in your mind so that you can start to just segment them and start to drill down on what's the best option. And it does kind of come down to experience. You get better at doing that.
And that is an answer based on experience right there, yes. Folks. So
yeah, sorry,
I can't even add anything to that. So awesome. Awesome. So as we close, Rachel, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you?
Okay, well, I am on Twitter and lots of other places as @RachelAndrew. And my personal website is rachelandrew.co.uk, which is probably the easiest way to find me and everything else that I do. Perch is at grabaperch.com. And that's really what I do as a day job. But yeah, find me on Twitter. I'm always happy to say hello and chat about things.
Awesome. Well, I loved having you on the show, Rachel. I learned a ton myself, and I can't wait to share this content with our listeners. I'm going to make sure I link everything up in the show notes that we talked about, and I just want to say fight on, my friend.
Okay, thank you. Good talking to you.
Thank you. What a fun interview with Rachel Andrew. I'm so thankful for experienced professionals like her who've seen the web evolve so much and have managed to stay on the bleeding edge of where it's going while helping all of us keep up and arrive at each new destination safely. Our friends at A Book Apart are offering an exclusive Defenders discount of 10% off Rachel's brand new ebook, CSS Grid Layout. Now, I've read it, and it's an absolutely enlightening read. Rachel is such a great teacher and guides us through how to implement this incredible new breakthrough in flexible web layout. Be sure to grab the coupon code that will be in the show notes and also at userdefenders.com/015. And don't delay, the offer is only good through the end of March.